Narayanam namaskritya naram cheva narottamam devim sarasvatim vyasam tato jayam udirayat. Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya.
Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya.
Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya.
Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya.
Reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 11, Chapter 31, Chapter entitled The Disappearance of Lord Krishna, text number 11. So. Divi Dundu Bayo Nedu Petu Sumanashas Cha Kat Satyam Damo Dritir Bhume Kirti Shris Chanu Tam Yayu Divi Dundu Bayo Nedu Petu Sumanasas Chakat Satyam Damo Dhritir Bhume Kirti Shris Chanu Tam Yayu Divi in heaven. Dundu Bayo kettle drums. Nedu sounded. Petu fell. Sumanasa flowers. Cha and Kat from the sky. Satyam, truth. Dharma, religion. Dhriti, faithfulness. Bhume, from the earth. Kirti, fame. Shri, beauty. Cha, and Anu, following. Tam, him. Yayu, they went. Translation and purport by the followers of Srila Prabhupada. As soon as Lord Krishna fell from the earth, truth, religion, faithfulness, glory, and beauty immediately followed him. Kettle drums resounded in the heavens and flowers showered from the sky. Translation responsibly. As soon as Lord Krishna left the earth, truth, religion, faithfulness, glory, and beauty immediately followed him. Kettle drums resounded in the heavens, and flowers showered from the sky. Purport. According to Srila Sridhar Swami, all the demigods were jubilant because each one thought Lord Krishna was coming to his own planet. Translation response. Text 8. Most of the demigods and other higher beings led by Brahma could not see Lord Krishna as he was entering his own abode, since he did not reveal his movements, but some of them did catch sight of him. And they were extremely amazed. Just as ordinary men could not ascertain the path of a lightning bolt as it leaves a cloud, the demigods could not trace out the movements of Lord Krishna as he returned to his abode. Purport. The sudden movements of a lightning bolt are seen by the demigods, but not by human beings. Similarly, the sudden departure of Lord Krishna could be understood by the Lord's intimate associates in the spiritual sky, but not by the demigods. Text 10. A few of the demigods, however, notably Lord Brahma and Lord Shiva, could ascertain how the Lord's mystic power was working, and thus they became astonished. All the demigods praised the Lord's mystic power and then returned to their own planets. Purport. Although the demigods are virtually omniscient within this universe, they could not understand the movements of Lord Krishna's mystic potency. Thus they were astonished. Amagyan timarandasya genanjana shalakaya chakshurin malitam yena tasmai shri gurave namaha shri chaitanya nobisham stapitam yena bhutale swayam rupa kadamayam dadati swabhadantikam vansha kalpatirubhyascha kripa sindubhi evacha Petitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadha Srivasadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Ram Hare Rama Ram Rama Hare Hare So it is described here that when Krishna left the earth, truth, religion, faithfulness, glory, and beauty immediately followed him. So it says in the final verse of the Bhagavad Gita that wherever there is Krishna and wherever there is Arjuna, there will certainly be victory, morality, extraordinary strength, and opulence. So wherever Krishna appears, then all of these auspicious things occur. So similarly, when Krishna left the earth, all of these negative things took place. Truth disappeared. Actually, it is described that there are four pillars of religion. What are the four pillars? Austerity, mercy, truthfulness, and cleanliness. So these are the four legs of religion. It's described in the first canto of the Bhagavatam. Dharma means religion, exists when these four are observed by human society. So we see when people are merciful, when people are clean, when people are truthful, and when people are austere, they practice austerity, then you can see that Dharma flourishes. So when Krishna left the world, these four, they became less and less prominent. And we understand that in Kali Yuga, especially, we see Kali Yuga is understood to be or identified as being devoid of these qualities. You see in Kali Yuga, people are not merciful. Just like one man visited the farm on the weekend, and he was saying how I cannot kill a rabbit, I cannot kill a bird, I cannot kill a butterfly, I cannot kill so many different creatures. But then we said, do you eat meat? And he said, yes, I eat meat. So this is Kali Yuga, age of quarrel and hypocrisy. People say one thing, but then do the other. So by Prabhupada's definition, this is not actually mercy. This is not mercy. And one cannot cultivate spiritual life or Krishna consciousness unless one becomes merciful to all living entities. Just like we see, there's one famous conversation that Prabhupada has with one leader of the church in France. What was his name? Yeah.
Is
that the priest?
Saint Francis.
No, no. Prabhupada had a conversation with, he was a priest in France. You see the video like that. And Prabhupada just continually hammers on this point. He said, why do you eat the flesh? Prabhupada said, it says in your Bible, thou shalt not kill. So then why are you eating meat? This is the way Prabhupada would preach when he came to people who are from the Christian faith. He would say, why do you eat meat? And the cardinal or the priest, he was speaking to Prabhupada for some time, and then he said, you know, like this, we interpreted that killing means human beings. Prabhupada said, no, it says, thou shalt not kill. Killing means any living entity, like that. It is obvious what it means, like that. But he was trying to get... So then he got to a point where he was obviously becoming a little maybe frustrated by the conversation. So he said, anyway, it is not so important. So he tried to divert it, but Prabhupada, he would not let him divert. And Prabhupada said, no, we must understand this point. It says, thou shalt not kill. Prabhupada said, when preaching, Prabhupada said he is like a karate fighter. He finds the opponent's weak point and he kicks it and kicks it and kicks it until he falls down. So Prabhupada said that's how he preaches, like a chopping technique, like his Guru Maharaj, Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur, whose appearance day it is today. This was the mood of the Acharyas. This is how they preach, with this mood. They find the weak spot and then they just attack it and attack it and attack it. And whenever this priest tried to divert, you see the conversation must go for 15, 20 minutes something. Prabhupada just keeps bringing it back every time to the same point. No, it says, thou shalt not kill. How can you be merciful? How can you develop a soft heart? How can you develop spiritual realization if you don't develop genuine mercy? Kripa means actual mercy. It means that you're merciful to the human being, but then you don't have any mercy towards the animal. No? So then what level of consciousness have you developed? This is not actual spiritual life. It's hypocritical. Just like, as I said, the man came on the weekend and he said, oh, I do not like to kill the birds. I do not like to kill the rabbits. I do not like to kill this. And then we said, do you eat the meat? And he said, yes, I eat meat. I like bacon. So, okay, we'll kill the pig, but not the rabbit. So what sort of realization is that? It means no realization. Therefore, if you practice actual religious life or actual spiritual life, you have to practice mercy. It must be practiced. It cannot be hypocritical. Prabhupada would even criticize the devotees when they would kill the mosquitoes. Prabhupada would even criticize the devotees when they would kill the ants. Like that. One time in one of the temples... they had a problem with rats or cockroaches in the kitchen. And one of the devotees said, Prabhupada, are we allowed to kill them? Prabhupada said, we should kill you. He said, because you are unclean. If you're clean, they will not come. That means you are not clean. So this is the actual standard. We do not kill anything whimsically. Because otherwise you cannot develop real Krishna consciousness if you don't have a respect for life. Even the trees. There was one tree which was growing very close to the temple in America. I think it was in Houston or Dallas. And Prabhupada came to the temple. And then next year he came. The big tree, it was very close to the temple. And Prabhupada came the next year and the tree was gone. And Prabhupada said, where is that tree? And the devotee said, oh, we cut it down because it was close to the temple. Prabhupada said, we should cut you down. You have no right to touch. When Prabhupada finished... staying at Tittenhurst, which was John Lennon's estate, Prabhupada used to go for a walk every morning around the grounds. And the day that he left, because he'd go for his walk around the path around the grounds, and the day that he left Tittenhurst, he went for his final walk, and when he went past the different trees, he would stop and touch the trees, touch their leaves, because he developed a friendship or a companionship with the different living entities. So Prabhupada was seeing it with a spiritual vision. Pandit Sama Darshana. Krishna says this is spiritual vision. Not that, oh, I see one thing, I don't see the other thing. I like the rabbit, but I don't like the pig.
I like the whales, but I don't like the cows. Like that. That is not spiritual life. You don't actually have compassion, or you don't actually have spiritual vision. You don't actually have love for all the living entities. When one develops actual spiritual vision, then one has affection for all of the living entities in Krishna's creation. Just like I was reading yesterday, and Prabhupada was saying, we have so-called enemies in this material world. Sometimes someone is your enemy. They don't like you. Right? Does it ever happen to you? No, because you're all sadhus. That's why you didn't put up your hand. Yeah? But sometimes it happens to me that someone, they don't like you. That is called enemy. No, but Prabhupada said it's so-called enemy, not actual enemy. Because on the spiritual platform, we're all friends. There's no enemies in the spiritual world. There's some little bit of rivalry or competitiveness in the spiritual world. There's different camps, but there is no enemies. That is only the duality that we find in the material world. So Prabhupada said this is so-called enemy. Now that's why in Bhagavad Gita Krishna says you must be tolerant. Friends and enemies, happiness and distress, rain and heat, cold and warmth, victory and defeat, all of these dualities. Because they are just temporary situations. They're not actually taking place. So therefore, if we feel that someone is the enemy in this material world, that is just so-called enemy, Prabhupada is saying. Because actually on the spiritual platform, we feel that we have a close relationship or affection for that person. But because of the modes of material nature, someone is like an enemy in this material world. Just like someone tries to stop our preaching. And they create obstacles in our preaching. So they're acting like an enemy, but they're not really an enemy. They're just acting like that because of the modes of material nature. So therefore the devotee, he doesn't hold it personally towards them. If someone tries to stop our preaching, okay, we fight back. Prabhupada said, we will fight. We will not let them try to stop our preaching. We will fight. But we understand, it's just like some illusion. It's not actually that they are an enemy, it's just they're under the modes of nature. One time Prabhupada went for the morning walk in the zoo and the lion was near the cage and devotees were teasing the lion and making him become ferocious. And Prabhupada said, leave him alone. Do not antagonize him. Because Prabhupada was seeing he's on his spiritual platform. And we see it, oh, it's a lion, we can have some fun. You have a little bit of fun, but if you're on the other side of the cage, then the story is a little bit different. On the outside of the cage, you act like you're a big man. Oh, come on, lion, what will you do? But then when you go on the other side of the cage, then suddenly you act a little differently. So that is because we don't have spiritual vision. There's one associate of Mahaprabhu. His name was... which one was it? Yeah, I think it might have been. It might have been Vasudev, I think. Vasudev Datta, I think. I'm just trying to remember which associate it was. I think it's Vasudev Datta, I'm not sure. But he used to slap the tigers. Because in Bengal, 500 years ago, the tigers would just wander through the forest. So when the tiger would come, sometimes he'd be chanting next to the Ganga, and the tiger would come, and then come very close to him and smell him, and he'd turn around because he was in ecstasy. From his chanting, and he would get the tiger, and he'd hug the tiger, and he'd slap the tiger. He'd say, chant, 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 like that. So he'd play with the tiger like this. So this is because of his spiritual vision. And Lord Chaitanya, you know, when Lord Chaitanya went through Jarikanda forest, then he made all of the tigers, the elephants, the deer, everyone began to dance and chant. Actually, the tiger and the deer are enemies. The deer is always fearful of the tiger. But Lord Chaitanya said to everyone in the forest, he said, chant. And when Lord Chaitanya said chant, they all began to chant. They all stood up on their back legs and they put their arms in the air. And the tigers were chanting, the deers were chanting. And the tigers and deers were embracing each other and chanting during the kirtan. So this is the spiritual platform. So it says that real religion means that one must have mercy. Mercy means one must see all the living entities equally. Then, if you want to have real religion, you must also have austerity. Austerity means there must be some tapasya. This is also one of the defects in the modern society. People are not austere. There is no capacity for austerity in this day and age. You see that people have become addicted to the mode of ignorance. Just like we used to have the jagyas inside the temple in this room. But then the jagya would make everything go black. So we have to clean all the time. So then we stopped doing the jagyas in here and we started doing up in the prasadam hall or out in the courtyard. So then one Sunday morning, and maybe 5 or 10 years ago, then we were having the jagya upstairs. And we took the deities up, took the Chota Radha Krishna, they came up, and one of the gurus was here, and we performed the jagya. So one of the devotees was blowing the conch shell while they're taking the deities up there, and the deities were there, and then they're blowing the conch shell, and the jagya started. And then it was about probably 8 o'clock in the morning, 8:30 in the morning, Sunday morning. So then one of the neighbors from across the road, and he walked across the road in his pajamas. And he came up and he walked upstairs and I was sitting near the door and he stood there and I went out to see him. I could see he was a little disturbed. And he said, what's wrong with you people? No? He said, it is 8 o'clock on Sunday morning, everyone is asleep and you're going, dude. He said, what is this? Like that. And I said, I'm very sorry. We should have been more considerate. So we told the devotee, please don't blow the conch shell. But this is because in Kali Yuga people have no capacity to perform tapasya, no capacity to perform austerity. In this day and age, people have become, as it describes in Kali Yuga, people become very lazy, especially Prabhupada says about spiritual progress. They prefer just to take everything very easy. And practically, people don't like to perform any austerity on any level. Now, what causes us to lose our capacity to perform austerity? Especially, it is taking intoxicating substances. And you see the whole world, and especially this country, Australia, they are like almost like world record holders, I think except for the Germans or something, in taking intoxication. And you see they had the floods recently up in Queensland. That part of Australia is where the world records are. Or at least this Australian records for taking the intoxication. That's where Bundaberg is. And what do they make in Bundaberg?
Ginger beer.
Ginger beer, and they make something else. Rum. Bundaberg rum. Very famous. And they all drink it up there. They just drink rum. They drink alcohol. It says... I can't remember what the statistics are, but what the average male in that part of Australia drinks per year is phenomenal. Something like 1,100 cans of beer or something per male each year or something like that. So like a phenomenal statistic. And then we see recently, because of their pap or their sinful activity, then there was all the floods right in that location. But they can't understand. And after the floods took place, everything was destroyed. All the crops were destroyed. There's no sugar cane left. All the wheat was destroyed. All the fruit was destroyed. So what did all the men do? Because they had nothing to do for a few weeks because everything was destroyed. They all went to the pub. They all went and sat in the hotel and they just drank. So this is the modern society. Engaged in taking too much intoxication. And when one takes too much intoxication, then what takes place? One loses all capacity for austerity. One cannot do tapasya. Now tapasya is necessary in spiritual life. You do not make advancement in spiritual life unless you perform austerity or tapasya. Therefore, what is the definition of tapasya? Voluntarily accepting something which you may not like to accept, or voluntarily rejecting something which you may not like to reject. That is the definition of austerity or tapasya. So it means we have to accept something. So maybe you don't like getting up early in the morning, but you have to do it. Because if you want to make spiritual progress, spiritual advancement, you have to get up 4 o'clock in the morning. That is the system. Maybe you don't like it. Maybe it's winter. Hands up if you like getting up when it's cold. You like it. That's good. That's good. That should be the attitude. We like it. Because that's the mode of goodness. Mode of goodness says, something which is bitter in the beginning becomes pleasurable in the future. That is mode of goodness. Mode of passion means something is difficult, we don't like to do it. We'll accept all the easy things in the beginning, but they become difficult in the end. So we have to perform tapasya. So I remember when we first joined the ashram, when I was living here in the Brahmachari ashram, then one time we went travelling in May, which is cold in Australia, that's our winter time. We went to Tasmania, which is south of here, it's even colder than here. So we went there, and because we were Brahmacharis, I'd only been a devotee for about 3 months or so, we used to have cold showers every morning. That was the standard system. I don't know if you guys still do it. You don't do it. Fine, that's not. So we did it. Yeah. We only did it for a few months. I didn't do it for long. I didn't do it for years and years. I did it for some time. Do you still do it? You still take cold shower? Like that. Some of my friends still take. Ajita takes cold shower every day. Every day. Last 25 years. He's the temple president of New Govardhan. Like that. He was down here for the Rath Yatra. You see him, he's very powerful. Like that. Every day, last 25 years, takes cold bath. Every day gets up at 3:30 in the morning. Every day. He's just like very staunch, very austere, very sense controlled, very powerful, very disciplined in the mind. Like that. So it is good. So we went down there and we're taking cold shower. And cold shower was very cold. Because it was like May is cold and it's freezing. Get at 4 o'clock in the morning, some caravan park, go in there and take cold shower like that. So then I came back to Melbourne after a few months. We went down there to do Sankirtan. I think we were there for 3 weeks. And then we came back here and then I got in the shower and I turned on the cold tap and I got under. And I thought, oh, that's strange. I turned on the warm tap because I thought the water felt like it was warm. And then I got out again, then I turned it off and it was actually the cold tap. Because it was so cold in Tasmania, when I got back to Melbourne, it actually felt like the cold water was warm. So I got under it. Oh, that's nice. So this is tapasya. Tapasya is necessary if you want to make spiritual advancement. There must be sense control. If you don't learn to control your mind, if you don't learn to control your senses, you cannot make advancement in spiritual life. You can't advance in Krishna consciousness. You have to learn to control the mind, to control the senses. That's why we do some tapasya. That's why maybe we have the cold shower. Because it learns to control the mind. That's why we may reduce our eating. Or we may reduce not eating sweets, for example. I remember sometimes when we were brahmacharis, we used to not eat sweets. Only maybe on the Sunday feast. Like that. Very disciplined. Like that. So these things are good for your advancement. You have to be balanced. You should not be... The whole point of doing austerity is to increase your devotion to Krishna. If you're not increasing your devotion to Krishna, then your austerity is not considered to be complete. If you do tapasya, but it's not balanced or it's too much tapasya, the heart becomes hard. You get the negative result. You get the wrong result. So we have to be careful that our tapasya leads to the right goal. So devotees should do some austerity, but they should do it in a balanced way. Not that you do too much austerity, so then your mind becomes all weird. You see, sometimes devotees, they do too much austerity, they become a little imbalanced. And they become socially abnormal. They become eccentric. And then they're kind of like this misfitting personality. So it should be balanced. The austerity must be proper. So you need to perform austerity, you need to be merciful, and then you need to perform cleanliness. In order to make advancement in spiritual life, you need to be clean. Now Prabhupada says this is clean internally and externally. Because you cannot advance in Krishna consciousness unless you are clean. Srila Prabhupada says that the Krishna consciousness movement will develop a revolution in cleanliness. It will be known to, because we're automatically known to be clean. Just like down at the farm, we had to register our kitchen. So in order to register the kitchen, then you have to go and do a food safety handler's course. So we went there and we did the course. And basically, they taught us very little. Because as devotees, we're automatically clean. We don't need to be told to wash your hands after every time you go to the toilet. Automatically we do that. Just like sometimes we go out on Sanctum and we go to the public toilets, and I've seen the men, they come in, they're drinking their beer. They come in, they pass water, right, and then they just walk out still drinking their beer. No washing hands, no anything. Right? This is uncivilized culture. Prabhupada said we'll be known for a revolution of cleanliness. You always see the devotees. Prabhupada said the devotees will always look clean. You see the women always look clean. The men always look clean. This is the standard. So if you want to make progress in spiritual life, you must be clean. Now, cleanliness also means internal. It means that in the mind, in order to become clean, you have to practice brahmacharya. Brahmacharya means no sex life. So it means externally we practice no sex life. Then we do not have sex. The only person we have sex with is with the husband or with the wife. Right? If you're in married life, you can have sex to have children. Otherwise, there is no sex. That is internal cleanliness, internal purity. Now, Prabhupada points out in the seventh canto of the Bhagavatam that if you are thinking of sex life in the mind, then that is the same as having sex life externally. It is not different. It is not clean. Right? If the mind, cleanliness in the mind, externally you may be practicing celibacy, externally you may be externally clean, but in the mind you must also be practicing. It means that if you're thinking of sex life in the mind, Prabhupada said this is the most valuable bedstead. Because in the mind you can make everything very opulent for sense gratification, and you can enjoy sex in the mind, but that is not internal cleanliness. So externally we remain clean by taking a bath. There are different types of baths that you can take. The usual bath that we take is in water. We take a shower, or we take a bath in the river if we're near some river like that. Or it says that when the rain is coming, when the sun is there and when the rain is coming simultaneously, it says you can also take that bath. Sometimes the sun is shining and the rain is coming simultaneously. That is also auspicious. You can also take bath at that time. But generally we just take bath in water. And Prabhupada says, internally how do you take bath? You chant the Hare Krishna mantra. Bhakti Sananta Saraswati Thakur says, beat your mind. Because your mind is unclean. Your mind is impure. So you must purify the mind. You must purify what is in your consciousness. How do you do that? Through the chanting of the Maha Mantra. So therefore every morning we get up and we chant the Maha Mantra. Properly. Sometimes I've been listening to the devotees chant their japa around the temple. Sometimes you hear what the devotees are chanting. It's not exactly the Maha Mantra. Something like the Maha Mantra, maybe related to the Maha Mantra, but not exactly the Maha Mantra. Like that, dropping words, missing words, slurring the words, not chanting it properly. Like that. When you chant, you must be hearing all of the, as Prabhupada says, 32 syllables, or 16 words of the Maha Mantra. Like that. It must be audible, it must be clear. Now, then you get the benefit. Prabhupada said you must chant with the tongue. What does that mean, you must chant with the tongue? Yeah, speak clearly. It means don't. If you're not using your tongue, it will sound unclear. So one becomes internally clean by chanting properly. The chanting must be proper. If you don't chant properly, you will not get the proper result. Like that. So we must develop mercifulness, cleanliness, austerity, and what is the final quality? Truthfulness. Now that is said to be the last quality which is left in Kali Yuga. It says the other four qualities have already been destroyed to a great degree. People are not austere, they're not merciful, they're not clean, but still there is some standard of truthfulness, but that is very quickly disappearing in Kali Yuga. So a devotee must be truthful. His Holiness Kadambakanand Swami always asked this question to devotees. Hands up if you didn't tell a lie in your life. You've never told a lie. Hands up if you haven't told a lie in the last 1 week. Put your hand up if you did not lie in the last 1 week. Okay, there's five saintly people. All right. Hands up if you did not tell a lie in the last 24 hours. Okay, we're very saintly. We did not lie for the last 24 hours. It's something we're habituated to doing in Kali Yuga. Everyone lies constantly. The whole world is based on lies. Everything is based on untruth. And we do it ourselves because we are contaminated by the age. But actual religion flourishes when there is truth. Param satyam di mihi. Krishna is the absolute truth. And there should not be any lies coming from the devotee's consciousness. Of course, in the Shastra, it says sometimes you can lie. There's actually sometimes when you should lie, according to the Shastra. Just like if someone's about to be killed. Just like one time, there was an example. These soldiers were looking for one person. He was the thieves, dacoits. They were chasing after one person. So he ran into the ashram to hide. And he was hiding there, and then all the thieves ran in. They were going to kill him. And he was hiding. And they said, "Have you seen this person?" So then what do you do at that point?
No.
You tell the truth, right? You say, "Yeah, he's just behind the bush." I must tell the truth under all circumstances. No, you say, "No, I haven't seen the guy. I don't know who you're talking about." Or you say, "Yeah, I saw him. He just ran down the road there," like that. So that says in the Shastra, it says sometimes to save someone's life, or there are certain circumstances, then you may lie. But otherwise, it is not accepted. So therefore, you can see these days in Kali Yuga, because people are lying too much, then it is causing all sorts of problems. Just like what's happening in Egypt at the moment. Big problems. Right? You see, Egypt is falling apart. Socially, it's falling apart. Why? One of the main reasons is because there are lies. Because the government says, "We will do this, we will do that," and then they don't do it, and then everyone becomes disturbed, and then suddenly you have total social chaos and disharmony. So, devotees, in order for religion to flourish, these four things must be there. We must practice truthfulness, we must practice austerity, we must be clean, we must be merciful. Right? And then, spiritual life can progress. Therefore, when you take initiation in ISKCON, you're asked to do four things, four nisheda, four things you must avoid, and one thing you must accept. So what are the four things you must avoid? No meat eating, no illicit sex, no intoxication, no gambling. Why are these four things given? So you'll develop these four qualities, because they are necessary to advance in Krishna consciousness. Right? And then one thing that you must do, one vidhi, every day you must chant 16 rounds a day. Because if you don't do that, then you cannot do the other four things. You cannot be truthful, you cannot be austere, you cannot be merciful, and you cannot be, what is the other one? Clean. You cannot be these things unless you're chanting every day, regularly. Therefore we are given this system. Now today is the most holy appearance day of Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur. There will be a program at 12 o'clock in the temple. We'll have Guru Puja and Pushpanjali for Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur. So if anyone was here, please come for the program. Now, he appeared on this day in Jagannath Puri. At that time, Bhaktivinoda Thakur was living in Jagannath Puri, and he was the magistrate of the court. So he, in the British government, Bhaktivinoda Thakur was the highest placed Indian in the British Raj at that time. But he saw that he wanted to develop Krishna consciousness all over the world and in India. So he prayed that he would have a ray of Vishnu. He prayed that a son would come, a divine personality who would come, who would assist him in spreading this Krishna consciousness all over the world. So when he was born, it is said he was born with the umbilical cord wrapped around his body like a Brahman thread. Just like we have our Brahman thread wrapped around our body, his umbilical cord was wrapped around him like that. And it is said, when they saw his body at the time of his birth, he had the 32 signs of a Mahapurush. And it said there were 32 bodily symptoms in one's physiognomy, which one can judge to say, is this person auspicious? They must have a very broad forehead. Their eyes will be very wide and like shaped like lotus, like that. Their ears are very profound, like that. It means not big, but very like round and prominent, like that. The mouth, the lips will be very prominent also. They will have certain height. It says that the arms will reach almost to the knees, like that. So there's 32 symptoms which we can judge that this person is very auspicious. So it is said that he had all 32 symptoms of a Mahapurush, of a great personality. So then, on his first grain ceremony, they did the first grain ceremony on the Ratha Yatra. So the Ratha Yatra, where he was born, is just a few, it's probably a few hundred meters from the Jagannath Puri temple on the main road in Puri. So Jagannath came on his cart. And sometimes during the Ratha Yatra, you read in the Chaitanya Charitamrita that Jagannath, he comes very quickly, and other times he stops continuously. And it says that when he stops, sometimes the cart cannot be moved. It says in the Chaitanya Charitamrita that when the Jagannath, when his cart would stop, that sometimes they would bring elephants to try to move the cart from behind, try to push the cart, and even the elephants could not move the cart. Sometimes when Jagannath stops, then that's it. So he stopped in front of Bhaktivinoda Thakur's house for 3 days. Well, he just came and just stopped. The cart stopped and no one could move the cart. So then, finally, Bhaktivinoda Thakur's wife, Bhagavati, she brought this new child. Bhaktivinoda Thakur had around 10 children. Then she brought this new son out onto the cart and took him up onto the cart in front of Jagannath for the first grain ceremony where he took his first grains. And at that time, it is said the Jagannath's garland, it slipped off the deity of Jagannath, it fell off and fell down, showing a sign of blessing. It is said that sometimes when you're looking at the deities, if something falls, that is auspicious. That means you're getting a blessing. Does it happen to you sometimes? Sometimes it happens. You're looking at the deity and then something falls, that's considered to be an auspicious sign or a blessing. So the entire garland of Jagannath fell off and then they placed that garland around the child. Then he grew up, and at the age of 4, it is said that Bhaktivinoda Thakur once brought mangoes home. Because in India, Prabhupada said mango is the king of fruit. So he brought a nice basket of mangoes home to offer to the deities. So Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur was only 4 years old. He ran in like any 4-year-old child, and he said, "Oh, mango, mango." And he went to pick up one of the mangoes. And Bhaktivinoda Thakur said, "Have these mangoes been offered to the Supreme Personality of Godhead?" He corrected his child. And it said from that day, he took a vow that I will never eat mango again. From the age of 4. Just like sometimes we take vows. And our vows last about a week. I remember when I was a brahmachari, sometimes we take a vow. I take a vow, I will not eat any sweets except for on the Sunday feast. So on Sunday feast, I did so many sweets, and then Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday. And when Thursday would come, then that's it. Just go down the cool room about 9 o'clock at night, find some rest coolers, right? And then break the vow. So many times, we cannot keep a vow. But Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, from the age of 4, he said, "I will never ever take mangoes again." And whenever he was offered mangoes for the rest of his life, whenever his disciples would offer him mangoes, he said, "No, I cannot take. I am an offender." And he felt that he had offended Krishna by trying to take the offering before it had been offered to him. So this was his potency. Then at the age of 7, he had memorized the entire Bhagavad Gita, whole 700 verses by the age of 7. By the age of 11, Bhaktivinoda Thakur would often go and speak in public. He would often go and do public preaching programs. And it is said that sometimes he could not go because his health was not good. So one time He sent Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati, who was only 11 years old, and he went and he sat on the Vyasasan in front of all the brahmanas and all the pundits, and he gave a lecture, and he was quoting this shastra and quoting that shastra, and everyone was just amazed. Who is this personality? So it is said he was said to be a walking encyclopedia. He knew everything, practically about everything. He once became the court pundit for a king in Manipur, and it is said that he memorized the entire library. Yeah? He was Shrutidhara, which means he could read something once and he could memorize it perfectly. So he read every book in the library, thousands of books, and he memorized every single page of every book. So it is said throughout his life, whenever people would come to meet him to have darshan, he knew more about the subject than they knew. He was more expert in that particular subject than they were. So he was the most powerful scholar in all of India. So he once took a vow that he would chant 1 billion names of Krishna. So this would take 11 years to complete this vow, if he's chanting 300,000 names a day. So he was chanting 192 rounds every day for 11 years. He took this vow. So at that time, it is said that he had a little bhajan kutia in Mayapur, a little hut which he would live in. And during the rainy season, if it was raining too much, he would just get an umbrella and just hold it. If there was water coming through the roof of the hut, he would just get the umbrella and just hold it above him and just keep chanting. And he would not let his vow be broken for 11 years, every day chanting 192 rounds. And it is said that every time he finished a round, he would put one grain of rice. So at the end of the day, he would have 192 grains of rice, which means like a palmful of rice. And then he would soak that and cook that, and that's what he would take as prasad. So this is how powerful he was in his vrata, like that. So it is because of this vrata of chanting, this vow of chanting 300,000 names for 11 years, or 1 billion names, this is how he became empowered. And then he took the responsibility of then preaching, being empowered by Lord Chaitanya, to spread the Gaudiya Math all over India. So he opened 64 temples throughout India, and he initiated how many disciples? 60,000 disciples. So 60,000 disciples, opened 64 temples. And then he took sannyas from a picture of Gaurakishore Das Babaji Maharaj. He sat down in front of the picture and he performed the sannyas ceremony. And on the spiritual platform, Gaurakishore Das Babaji Maharaj, who had already left the world, he gave him sannyas. And then he became a Gaudiya Vaishnav sannyasi. It is said that when he wanted to take initiation, Bhaktivinoda Thakur said, you take initiation from Gaurakishore Das Babaji Maharaj. So he came to Gaurakishore Das Babaji Maharaj and said, please give me initiation. Now Gaurakishore Das Babaji Maharaj had taken a vow that he would not take any disciples. So Bhakti Sananta Saraswati Thakur said, please make me your disciple, please give me initiation. And Gaurakishore Das Babaji Maharaj said, I will ask Lord Chaitanya. So he said, come back tomorrow. So Bhakti Sananda Saraswati Thakur came back the next day and he said, what did Lord Chaitanya say? And he said, I forgot to ask. And he said, come back tomorrow. So he came back the next day and he said, what did Lord Chaitanya say? And Gaurakishore Das Babaji Maharaj said, Mahaprabhu said no. And then Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur, he began to have tears in his eyes. His eyes became moist, filled with tears. He said, quoting that bhajan, Gurudev, by Bhaktivinoda Thakur, he said, if you do not give me your mercy, I will not maintain my life. In other words, I will go and drown myself in the Ganges. If you won't give me initiation, then I'll go to the Ganges, I'll drown myself. I've no reason to live. And then Gaurakishore Das Babaji Maharaj saw how sincere he was, then he gave him initiation. And Gaukacharya's Babaji Maharaj, I think he only had two disciples. One was Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, but I think the other one was Vamsidas Babaji. So then, he became a prominent preacher all over India. He opened so many temples. He created the printing press. Not created it, but he popularized the printing of the books and spreading them all over India. And then, in 1922, he met Abhay Charan Das, who was A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami, to become A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami. And he met him in Kolkata on the roof of one temple. And when Prabhupada went to see him, Srila Prabhupada was a follower of Gandhi in 1922. And he came to him and he offered his obeisances. And when he stood up, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur looked at Srila Prabhupada. And he said, "You're a very intelligent young man, speaking English language. You should go to the Western world and spread the movement of Lord Gauranga." No? And Prabhupada was struck that this sadhu had given him this instruction, first time they had met. So Srila Prabhupada, he began to argue with Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur. He said that, how can we spread Krishna consciousness if India is not free? And Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, he defeated Prabhupada. And Prabhupada said he liked being defeated by his Guru Maharaj. And then he accepted him in his heart as his guru, and then in 1933 he took initiation for Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur. In 1936, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, he passed from this world, and just a few weeks before he left this world, he wrote a letter to Srila Prabhupada, and he re-emphasized his point that if you ever get money, then print books like that. So Prabhupada was given this instruction again and again, and based on the instructions of Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, Srila Prabhupada developed ISKCON, spread it all over the world on behalf of his Guru Maharaj, and Prabhupada would say, "All the credit goes to my Guru Maharaj. It is by his mercy that this movement is spreading." So why is this movement spread so far around the world? Because Prabhupada followed perfectly the order of his Guru. And how does this movement continue to spread? When we perfectly follow the order of our spiritual master, sincerely, then this movement will spread all over the world. So today is the most auspicious appearance day of Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, and we'll have a Pushpanjali and a Guru Puja at 12 o'clock. So if any devotees are here, please come. Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur ki. So, are there any questions or comments on what we have discussed? Kali Yuga is just hypocrisy.
Well, sometimes it's just ignorance. It's you know, they're trying to be good, they're trying to, but so many children, they don't know that this little piece of pink stuff represents something that's actually from an animal. And it's recently I read that, what was it in England, the teacher brought the children to the slaughterhouse, and the children, they freaked out and they were crying and like anything when they saw that happening, and they were traumatized. This is so often it is our ignorance that they don't even realize that what gelatine is or what that it's made of bones. You know, like they just don't know.
Yeah, Paul McCartney says that if the slaughterhouses have glass walls, then everyone will be vegetarian. The people, they don't understand what's going on. It's all done in Maryborough or Colac or some place far away, and there's terrible torture taking place. If people don't see it, then they don't relate the two objects like that.
So. His preaching was effective. It's called Nine Guru, all over.
Simha Guru. Yeah. Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, he was very heavy. very street. Actually, it says that sometimes he'd walk down the street in Kolkata and he would see a Mayavadi. So he'd walk over to him and he would grab the Mayavadi. And he'd say, "Why are you cheating the people? Why are you cheating the people?" Like this, shake him, physically shaking the door. So he was called Simha Guru, Lion Guru. It says that sometimes the Mayavadis would see him, they'd walk back down the street. He'd be walking, they'd see him, they'd turn around and they'd go the other way. He's so powerful in his preaching. His chopping technique, Prabhupada's a chopping technique. He would just chop. And Prabhupada was like that in his technique also. Yeah. And His Holiness Devan Rajaswami is also, he has that technique also. Very, just like that. Very powerful technique. And it makes, it breaks the Maya, or breaks the shackles of illusion. And that's it. Any other point?
God is very strict about not eating meat or meat products or gelatin and things like that. But I noticed when these days a lot of devotees are eating kami bread and kami brains and kami grains. But years ago, Tamal Krishna Maharaj, you know, he gave some lectures on in kami grains on how it makes your mind wicked.
Yeah, I mean, the stricter you are, obviously, the better it'll be for your consciousness, like that. So you see, these days, a lot of devotees use leather products. Right? We're supposed to be practicing ahimsa. Ahimsa means non-violence. So it means we don't eat meat, we don't eat eggs, we don't eat chicken, we don't eat fish like this, but then we wear leather shoes and these things. Devotees should avoid these things also. Just like, you know, Birkenstock, they have lines of shoes which are non-leather, like that. So you don't have to wear leather like that. Even my, you know, I brought some running shoes recently, because I go running. So there is Brooks, one of the brands, I mean, there's no leather in the shoe. So you just ask, you say, "Do you have any shoes non-leather?" I say, "Yeah, there's shoes." So there's alternatives, you know, leather belts, and then you even see devotees wear all sorts of things, leather watches, not necessary like that. So we have to practice ahimsa on every level. That's the most important factor. And then in terms of not eating grains which are cooked by non-devotees, Prabhupada says in Chaitanya Charitamrita that if you eat the grains which are cooked by the non-devotees, your mind becomes wicked. So the more strict you are, obviously, the better it is. Like that. So, especially devotees should try to avoid eating the grains which are cooked by the non-devotees. But that's all.
Also, one more point I read that when he joined the Sanskrit college in Calcutta, about the age of 18 or 19, he didn't want to study more than 3 years because he said if he studied more, then his parents would persuade him to get married. So, he didn't want to have nestic samachari. He didn't want to be very good.
Yeah, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur was a naishtika brahmachari. He never discharged his semen in his entire life. And he actually made a club when he was going to university. Everyone joined the club. You have to be a naishtika brahmachari for your whole life. And he was the only one who... everyone else got married. But he remained a whole life perfect naishtika. Even when some of his female disciples, they would say they wanted to have private darshan with him, he would say, "No, your husband must come. He would never be alone with a woman." Like that. That was his strictness, his standard. Like that. So, any other question or comment? Just put your hand up. No. Anyone else? Okay, so if you're here, then please come to the program. Srila Prabhupada ki, Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur ki.